Miss Yarra the Bird.
Ave Satana!
Hail
Satan!
Hail Satan!
Greetings, heathens. Welcome to Hail Satan. This is the podcast exploring Satanism, culture, and life in general through the eyes of modern Satanists. My name is Joseph Rose. I'm a member of an amazing congregation called Satanic Delco, and we welcome members from anywhere in the world. If you want to learn a little more, visit satanicdelco.com. Today, I'm going to have a conversation with one of the original co-conspirators of the Satanic Temple and an all-around interesting character within modern Satanism. But if you have a moment, please visit the website at HailSatanPodcast.com. You'll find links to join me on social media, a forum to send me an email, and a link to join up with us all on Patreon. We have a few different tiers to choose from with various benefits, including the amazing Greetings from Hell Satanic Postcard of the Month Club. That is the most direct way you can support me and this show if you'd like to do that. Visit HailSatanPodcast.com. All right, guys. I am now joined by one of the original collaborators of the Satanic Temple. He is an author, publisher, artist, and instigator. He is the infamous Shane Bugbee. Welcome back, Shane.
Hey, thanks for having me, Joseph.
How's everything going?
Oh, really good. Really good. I lost some pounds like yourself, and I'm really proud of the book I put out. I'm pretty happy about things.
Yeah, we're going to talk about the book. And I know you've been getting around a little bit, maybe more than usual, doing some interviews and getting the word out there about everything you've been up to.
Well, I'm psychologically in the mood. I can do this again, you know, and so... You know, I just feel really good about things. I hope I get another 20 years out of life. I feel so different. It just seems like my adult years were very traumatic and heavy. And I'm really enjoying life right now. I get out and go for 5 mile walks a day and I just enjoy the fuck out of things right now. So
that's the way to do it, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I can't say I didn't enjoy my anger either. I went full force at it.
Same.
I'm not saying I did. It was just in a different kind of a feeling. This feeling is really just a love or warmth, or there's something. It's different. It's different, and so I want to experience it for as long as I experience what I look back on as a painful situation. But in the moment, it didn't feel like pain. It just felt like the way life was.
That's what I was just going to say. You don't recognize it at the time. It just feels like normal. This is just life.
Right, and you learn, you get wise, as you get older, you get wise, and you're like, wow, that was a real waste of time, all that hate or that energy of anger at some person. And I'm not saying I'm forever at war, but...
Yeah, you can't ever lose all of the saltiness.
Yeah, you're right.
Now, I've gotten to know you just a little bit over the course of the handful of conversations we've had, but I don't know you the way someone would if they were like a close personal friend hanging out with you in your neighborhood all the time. And I'm going to go out on a limb and say that pretty much everyone who writes their opinion about you on the internet also doesn't really know you. So if I can, I'd like to cut through some of the noise and speculation and just ask you some direct questions. Less so for me and more for those people, just to set the record straight for everyone out there who might have an opinion about Shane Bugbee.
Oh, give me the hardest. Go.
Are you racist against black people, Jewish people, or any other ethnic group?
I would say I'm not prejudiced. I am not a prejudiced person towards anyone. But there's a theory that all white people are racist. And I can understand that theory. And I have been racist. And the things that are weaponized against me, I said racist things. But within that moment, even, I was never prejudiced. I was working with, I was one of the first person to publish a sexual comic book with a woman. I was working with a Jewish woman. I was working with a black person when I worked with Nazis. So I worked with all of these people at one time. I wasn't prejudiced against the Nazis either. So that's what's held, you know, today people expect that. And so I've done racist things, and I'm not sure about the concept of all white people being racist and all men being sexist. It's an interesting concept. I haven't really, I'm an older person, so I don't know if I agree with it totally. So I'm definitely not prejudiced. And, you know, I can't say I haven't been or done racist things or said things in conversation that are considered racist, even to this day. I have a black man that's my therapist, and sometimes we'll talk about that stuff. And he said, well, if we were at a cocktail party, I might consider that, you know, I might be considered you're speaking outside your realm. I'm constantly, you know, looking to educate myself throughout life. So I'm not going to say I can't make the mistake of being racist. And I think a lot of people online think that they don't do things racist, but they might. I mean, some people might consider being a white person and taking a job in a black neighborhood at a Trader Joe's racist or some sort of slight. You know, that's a nuanced conversation, and that's for the person of that race to tell me that I'm racist. But what I've found throughout my life is it's always white people telling me I'm racist. And that's a real strange thing. And with online, what's been weaponized against me is always white people weaponizing this racist stuff. And my counselor, therapist would say, he goes, you notice there's probably never a black person spreading that recording of you saying the N-word around. I'm like, right. And he goes, yeah, because we expect all of you are saying that. And it hurts us. And so it's just as like to use that as a weapon against you is just as racist as you saying that. And so, I don't have a problem. I mean, with sitting down with anyone. I'm an artist and I've never been anything but that. So I can actually sit down with anyone. And I'm in Chicago. I can sit down with people of the Nation of Islam. And they are haters. I've seen the Nation of Islam and white Nazis, actual Nazi parties, sit down together and embrace. And so I can sit down with haters or anyone, but that doesn't mean I'm going to agree with them, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
In our context, we talk a lot about that 24-hour Might is Right radio show I did. Yeah. And that's like infamous. And like I've gotten my head clear. I had some really hard times, and a lot of it because of the harassment I sustained from groups of people that weaponized that against me. And to look at that, finally, after all those years, look back at that show. I did this anniversary show, and I really looked back and tried to understand it. And it's so long ago. And I was like, yeah, but the context I was speaking from was a free speech context. Like I know, you know, kids, they don't get it. Like we didn't have the internet.
Yeah.
We had to go to a newspaper editor and try to get our opinions into a newspaper or try to get our opinions on a TV station. We didn't have that freedom. So when I had that freedom, I was like, I can say anything. And so I'm going to say the worst things. I'm going to say whatever I want, the most shocking things. So that's where I was coming from, where I've always come from. My whole life is based on this idea of free speech.
Yeah.
Though me saying free speech, I'll be accused of that's a dog whistle. It's a dog whistle to that person, not to me.
Yeah.
I believe in free speech, and I believe that we haven't even realized free speech in our country. Free speech is something that you suffer no consequences actually from what you say. Zero. You don't lose jobs. You don't get punched in the face. You get to say what you say, and if someone doesn't agree with you, they get to walk away or use better words or louder words. But that's what free speech is. And I don't think the left liberal community understand, the younger people understand that when you start chipping away at free speech, you start chipping away at the right for trans people to have their expression. That's an expression. So we're talking about the not just a free speech movement, but the freedom to express yourself how you feel in that moment. And I think one of the most offensive things for me in the idea that someone would say I'm racist is like, oh, buddy, pal, if I were, I would be. Like I have no problem saying what's on my mind. And that's the person I've always been. And to be downgraded as someone's like, oh, he's racist, but he's, you know, because we're here at we're policing the internet. He won't say anything. Oh no, I would. I'd be building websites. I'd be putting books out, and I'd be doing damage to your philosophical beliefs. And I can't do that. Ask anyone that I've gone to war with. So it's like, I don't have a history of that in my life. So it's just how that was weaponized against me is nefarious. And it's how I understand it is like the government tactics like COINTELPRO and stuff like that, where they attack people who are challenging a narrative, and they attack them with that kind of stuff. He's racist. He's sexist. And I feel bad for people. They just don't have the time to do research. So I get how those things are shocking. I've been young too, and I was a person who jumped at the mere mention of someone. I was in a cult called the Church of Satan. I sort of joke about that, but it was like when I was in, if you said something bad about LaVey, I'm going to throw your books in the garbage can. You know, you say something bad, you know, I'm it was gang. That's the kind of gang mentality or whatever, you know, religious mentality. And to see this and within Satanism, I got to say this too, within Satanism, it's like, are you crazy? You motherfuckers use the S word. That's the most offensive word in this country. Yeah. Like, it's crazy offensive. So we use words to shock people. We use the most shocking word in a Christian country. And yet you're going to, this guy used a word to shock. No shit. You mean within the satanic community, I used shocking words? Oh my goodness.
Yeah. They want to use language that shocks and offends other people, but they also want to be offended when they don't like what someone else says.
Right. And I'm not saying anyone was wrong about calling me out on that. They're right. And that stuff within the satanic philosophy, you're not looking to hurt people that didn't hurt you. And, you know, that was just not realized for me. And I've already explained that, I think, on your other show, so I don't need to keep going over it. But I definitely am back where I feel like I'm going to use whatever word I want when I want.
Yeah, we covered a bunch of that stuff about the Might is Right broadcast last time. Not really worth going over, but many, many years ago. What is that, over 20 years ago now?
Yeah, about 20 years.
20 years ago, plus you did the 24-hour Might is Right broadcast with Doug/Lucian Greaves. And you both used some subjectively offensive language. Now, all this time later, do you carry around any regret about that? Or are you able to just look back at that time spent as an angry, edgy young man and accept that it's all just part of your story?
Well, you know, for me, that's such a, you got 16 hours. Yeah. I've explained you my whole life.
Yeah.
Cause it's like very, that's a very nuanced thing. There's a lot of feelings that go on there. You know, it's like all, you know, a psychiatrist can put you through that one. I went through a lot, and especially cause it was weaponized against me. And I felt horrible. I was confused for a long. I was run out of towns for being a Satanist by right wingers. And then the left wing comes after me for being a Satanist and because Anton LaVey is supposedly racist and all this stuff. So it's like I was under attack for thoughts or ideas. And it just blew my mind because I understood that to be an intellectual, to talk about, you know, be an artist, that was sort of your job to shake things up. But it became so intense. There's a lot of feelings. Do I regret it? Well, it's hard to regret myself. I'm just me. So did I learn from it? Yeah, I learned a lot from it, pro and con. I can't even say would I do it again because that's so hard. That's such a ridiculous thing. I probably would because in that moment, those days, it was pre-internet. Like today, I understand things. You know, we communicate differently. We have a large, broad audience that we communicate to now. Yeah. So if I did that today, I would be called out immediately by a lot of people, and it would be on. There would be, you know, it'd be on. I would be taken in by the right wing, and they would.
Well, and the you that exists now, even if you were a young man, even if you were 20 years old again, the world is different. So you're different because you live in that world, and it would never exist ever again in the same way.
But I'm quite proud of that moment as well. I'm quite proud of that podcast. As an artist, you want things to live on. You want things to shake people up. You want to cause conversation. When I got into artwork, as a child, one of the memories I have is my dad working really hard, coming home, drinking beer and watching TV. And I was always thinking, how can I get him to not watch TV? You know, how can I get him to play? And when I'd show pictures, that would be seen and heard. And so then I've met, you know, heard Frank Zappa, and, you know, this, he was an intellectual. So I went that route and I started to use artwork. I'm happy that it caused a conversation. I'm happy that we're talking about these things. I gave people a forum to talk about racist talk online and stuff like that. So that's my soapbox they're standing on. Yeah. Okay. That's not theirs. They didn't do anything to cause a conversation. As a matter of fact, they're on my soapbox. And that's what they're do-nothings. They're do-nothings, and they're like leeches that attach themselves to someone who did something. I'm proud that I did something like that. I'm proud it survived. And I'm proud I get to continue to talk about that stuff because that's a really big goal. Even like you'll hear this from any artist, the black metal artist, stuff like that. They're like, well, I've talked to these guys about the same situation. How do you feel about being called racist, stuff like that? It's almost like a club. And they're like, basically the same thing I'm saying. They're like, well, we get to talk about our artwork, so we don't give a fuck because we're not. It doesn't matter to us because we're not. They weren't as affected. I was, for a lot of reasons that I don't even understand, but I was deeply affected. And that's one of the biggest things I was affected by was like, you know, I've never been a prejudiced person. So it was like, that's not me that you're saying. Like, I want to be seen for who I am.
Yeah.
And I've been a dick. I've been abusive. I've been a lot of things, but I'm just not what's been attached to me. Yeah. And what's been attached to LaVey. Like, I never saw him as a racist person, a prejudiced person, sure. I should say. I believe Black Lives Matter. How's that?
I'm sure some people will be happy to hear it.
Yeah. So that if they're asking, if I haven't answered the question in a way that they want, like, he didn't say he wasn't racist, because I hear that. It's like, oh, goodness.
Yeah. Enough people are just looking for the soundbite. You can't please everyone.
I had a girlfriend for 8 months. She was pleased.
Yeah. The book is called Founding of the Satanic Temple, Their Secrets Revealed. Having read through the book now, it is definitely much more than just telling the Satanic Temple story. So tell us a little bit about what we can find in the book.
I'm really proud of the book because it is, I think, a cool, complete story of like the culture. And you have the full interview with Anton LaVey. You have the last and full interview of Anton LaVey, the last interview with Stanton LaVey, and the last interview with Carla LaVey at the moment. I hope she does do more interviews, but she said she would never do another one. So, but within those interviews, within the Stanton and Carla interview alone, that's something that shakes the foundation of the Church of Satan. So it's not like I'm just going after the Satanic Temple. Like, Peter doesn't like that chick. Blanche doesn't like that shit. Yeah. You know, they're at war with those people. So it's like, I gave people a voice and I was blown away that people would not go and harvest their information. Cause like literally Carla would get off the school bus and answer the phone for the Church of Satan when they started. So she has a ground view, and she's daddy's little girl. So she looked up to him. She's so similar to him. So to hang out with her and to see her emote and stuff like that was really great. And I can't understand why I can't understand why people that are into that or are members of a group like that would tolerate the hiding of information, especially because, you know, Satanism is about study. I think it's an intellectual art group, our art movement. It's just not the pleasures of the flesh. It's just not the carnal. There's the intellectual. And so I'm blown away that people would accept that. And so I'm happy to have given that a voice in there. And Peter Gilmer, I've employed all of these people. Every one of them has worked for me. And that includes Peter Gilmore. He wrote Think For Me, and that's in this book. And you talk about Might Is Right. His writings about Might Is Right is in there. Anton's explanation of Might Is Right is in there. Carla explains it. So it's really explained in from their mouth. It's not explained from all this other rhetoric from far left or far right people that want to get on their soapbox and open their mouth about what they want to open their mouth about. This comes right from the horse's mouth. So I'm real proud of that. Yeah, I'm real proud of that stuff.
I think you mentioned it just then. You have the transcription of your interview with Anton LaVey, which was the last interview that Anton did. Is that right?
It's right. And that is credited in Blanche Barton's book that she wrote. She says Shane did do the last interview with Anton.
Yeah. Yeah, I have some Anton and Church of Satan questions for you. Are there any parts of the Satanic Bible or LaVey's overall philosophy that you clearly disagree with or don't really feel aligned with?
I'm not so much into ritual stuff for my own self, but I guess I am. I'm just not into it within the context of that book, how it reads. I'm not into following someone else's rituals, stuff like that. I think if you're looking to a book to do a ritual, you're probably, I don't know what to call you. I don't know what to say about it, but for me, my rituals exist around creation with artwork or making salsa. I'm cutting tomatoes and stuff. And that's where my mind, like in the occult, they say, stare into the fire, stare deep into the candle flame. You know, you get your concentration on your focus. And so that happens for me around a cutting board often with this tomato in my hand. And that's just where I find myself really going deep and subconscious and or when I'm making artwork. So I think we all have rituals that we do, from maybe going to the coffee shop every morning and doing something there. And when the coffee shop's not open, it upsets you. So we all practice ritual. I'm not saying I'm against ritual. I'm not going to follow your, when you write a ritual, Joseph, don't expect me to follow it.
Sure.
I'm going to not do that. I'm going to write my own rituals. I'm going to do my own thing. But I don't see, that's the problem. The hard thing about what LaVey did was he put something together that's like a brutal truth. And it's a brutal truth for the society that we live in. It's a reflection of America. It's not idealistic. It's realistic. And so Christianity and other religions are idealistic, but people don't operate that way. I wish love was the law. I wish I could trust everyone. I wish. And so to know the LaVeys is to know really beautiful, kind people. And they're like, I've explained many times, like gothic hippies, they're just really cool, or else, you know, you step on their toe, they're going to push you down. They're not going to tolerate it, but they're really cool. And so I just see Anton as he was a fry cook, an artist, and he was a person who was looking eye level with people. He wasn't a pope or a priest looking down on people. He was looking eye level when he's like, I'm going to do this. This is like, and I believe it was like a self-help book. So it's like, how can I not like it? And I think it was like any artist, he's reflecting what he's seen. He's seeing the downtrodden, he's seeing this stuff. So when I saw Might is Right, I saw it as a warning to the plumber stock that I came from. Like, look, this is what we're up against. We're living this idealistic American dream. We're free, but we're not here. Look at this. Read this book. And that's how I saw it. I didn't see it as something that was about supremacy. I saw it as a warning. And I remember on that 24-hour show, I was like, I wish I could go to Palestine and hand this out for free. And so present day, is Might right when you look at Palestine? You know, I don't think so. Yeah. I don't. And that kind of Might, I think, you know, outside of LaVey's philosophy, when you talk Might is Right, I think strength is right. But Might is like a moment, like love. And it doesn't stay. It's something, you know, like when you go to the gym and you're on the treadmill, you feel mighty when you leave, but that feeling goes away. But you build strength through those kind of victories. Yeah. And so, no, that's the thing about LaVey. He's hard to argue. I want to not like it. Okay. Anything I get into, I want to not like. I go into it and like, I want to destroy it. Yeah. That's same with my artwork and my creations. I want it destroyed. If it can be destroyed, destroy it. And so I can't figure out a way to do that with LaVey, except like the ritual, you know, I'm like just not. And when I first ran into the Satanic Bible, I flipped through it and I was like, yeah, this is common sense. I didn't take it as anything but common sense. This is just the way the world works. No shit, dude. But I'm in Chicago, and Might is Right or LaVey's philosophy really rings true to urban areas.
Yeah. So to this day, you feel pretty good about LaVey's philosophy. It feels natural and right to you.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, when he says you're born, not made, I can see where he's coming from with that. And, you know, it was an honor to be able to hang out with him. You know, when I went to meet him, he was just a famous person that I was going to meet I did interviews with and did a zine. So I met a lot of famous people. When I left, I felt he was magical. Like, he was really cool. And I think much like a lot of these counterculture people that die broke, Crowley, all of the Black Panthers, all of the Yippies, all of the radicals that pushed our culture forward, they did it because they wanted to try to make humanity better. Whether they were right or wrong, they did something that most don't have the courage to do. And they did something like, I want to push the pendulum my way with the way I think will be better for people, that'll be more humane. You know, and again, whether they're right or wrong, it doesn't matter to me. It's that intent, I think we were talking about earlier, that intent, that effort to push humanity forward, to change the world, to change what's around them for the better. And I think even in a Christian sense, let's say a religious sense, that when you're given life, it's a special thing and you should serve it. You know, and that's serving yourself like I'm a greedy individual myself, but it's to serve myself. You know, you want to give back to what you've been given. And I think that's just common sense too. Like if someone buys you a beer, you want to buy them a beer. That exchange goes back and forth. If you just take, who's going to want to hang out?
Yeah. And you mentioned it briefly, but since Anton passed away, you've maintained relationships with some of the LaVey family. Can you talk about that a little bit?
I maintain relationships with all of them the best I can. You know, I mean, it's always tumultuous, but I'm part of that family, you know, by default, even just because of LaVey making me a priest. I'm the last person of the old guard. So they respect that. So they take the call, just like Anton would have. He would take the call if I call, because he felt I was an important person. That's why he gave me that role. And he gave me the authority to speak on Satanism, something Doug Lucien Greaves doesn't have. He doesn't have that award. He got on my soapbox and you know, that's coming from a place where, you know, like I felt pretty low about myself at some point in my life, you know, and that's just due to socioeconomic things and social situations. I've definitely done a great amount of work that I can compete with most anyone that I'm looking across from if we're having to compete.
Do you have any?
I don't know what you asked now.
just about you maintaining some relationships with members of LaVey's family.
Stanton, yeah, I'm good friends with Sharon, Stanton's wife, right now. We're working on the Witch's Sabbath together. I really love working with her, and she is a LaVey, no matter what people want to say. You know, people want to discount her because she was a wife, but talking to her, it trickled down to hang out with Stanton, the grandkid. You know, he hung out with Anton. He picked up a lot from him. It was really, when I went and spoke with him, it wasn't what everyone, you know, I've known him for a long time, for decades. And so people have always spoke poorly about Stanton. But when you go to speak with him, when I would go to speak with him or anytime I spoke with him, he's a very smart person. And going to hang out with him and really becoming friends with him, I related to the pain and all of that, you know, the trauma that he had. But he was absolutely a genius, and his wife is nothing less. A really smart person. And to talk to her about Satanism, she has studied it for decades now. Yeah. And she studied under Anton's grandson. And that means something. Yeah. Whether, you know, I know that the party line in the COS is like, you can't be born into this role, even though Satanists are born, not made. So it's like, which is it? Right. And the LaVey's, Carla is amazing on the philosophy. She understands it. You know, she understands it as well as Peter or anyone else running the show, as well as Blanche. And
Carla was the daughter of Anton.
Yeah. And that was daddy's little girl. Yeah. Like that was the older daughter. He walked around the park with her. He took her out. He took her to the bookstores. She has amazing stories. And she retained everything, what he ate on his burrito, what he did. Talking to her, she knows everything about daddy, every fucking thing. So she paid really close attention to him and she loves him. And so there's a lot of information that has been hidden from people by people that are insecure. I think she called it what we call energy vampires, but she called them like personality vampires, or these are people are personality vampires. And I can see that with Blanche knows her, what she wants to know about Satanism. She studied it for a long time and she's real smart. And so is Peter, but they have a different bent. That's why they took it and they run it in their direction, their political bent. LaVey wasn't that. And I got this from the source, from Stanton, from Carla, from other people that are in the LaVey, Diane. They were more, they couldn't be stuck to the wall, truly. But they were definitely not someone to want to take advantage of people necessarily, but they would if they, you know, if it was presented to them. You know, this basically on the philosophy, someone's looking for something to be taken from them, take it.
Right.
So I really think like if people, I think in years to come, people will see his work, his writings and what the LaVeys were doing, like as really revolutionary thought. Like they looked at America and said, hey, this is how you can survive in America. And I remember talking to Bill Ayers and Bernadine Dorn, and these people are hippies and they're part of the Weather Underground. They planted bombs in the Pentagon. Okay. They're radicals. They're radical left as you get. And they're of a religious mind. I believe Christian, something like that. They're really close to something like that. They have a belief system. And Bernadine is really smart, well-read. So she saw it as this, what people, the typical party line is about Satanism. And when I explained to her, I'm like, he was an artist and he was looking at America and said, this is a reflection of America. This is how you survive in America. It's realistic, not idealistic. And once I said that to them, they were like, oh, we were wrong. Okay, we were wrong about this person. Now we get it. I said, it was nothing different than the Black Panthers, just different words, different attitude, but you know, them walking around shotguns, stuff like that. They were provoking thought as what artists do. But when I talk to Black Panthers or Bill Ayers or any of these old hippies, they all talk about, well, we never considered LaVey part of that. Even though when I explain it to them, they're like, you're right. He was part of that theatrical movement, but he became so popular so fast. He was everywhere. And he became, you know, this huge celebrity immediately. And so they were separated from that. They weren't.
Yeah.
They weren't.
Yeah.
They
didn't have Anton differed in a way back then because, well, probably for a lot of reasons, but I think a big one is that as scary as Satan is and can be to some people, there was still something different when you saw Anton, you know, back on the TV shows back in the day. There was something approachable, or you weren't immediately just terrified of him. You were curious and like, what is this guy up to? He's a little weird. He's almost a little silly sometimes, but also sinister at times.
Yeah, he was an adversary. And he understood the 0-1 dynamic of, you know, the church needs me, I don't need it. You know, they created this. I didn't, you know, we just play with each other.
Yeah.
Or Burger King McDonald's dynamic. They need each other. They play off the competition.
Yeah.
And so, and I was explaining this the other day, like, he's like a true artist. Like when something comes from inside you, you're not like, everyone tries to riff off LaVey, it just falls dead or it just doesn't work. And I would definitely say, wow, they did better. And I don't think you can do better with a Salvador Dali or Jodorowsky or a Crowley, because they did something from inside. They let whatever it was pull them along. They didn't create it. It created them. Like, it was like, this is what I must do. They just went forward and did it to their peril, to their fucking peril.
Yeah.
You know, and because they had to do it, it was impulsive. And that artist, I think that's that's one of the pieces in the formula of artists that are historic or stand the test of time or do something to change the world, is they did something that pulled them along, and sometimes they didn't know why they were doing it. And that's what I think, that was the thing that Anton had, that all these other occult groups and people that try to do what he does, they don't have that. They're not being pulled along. They want to be like that, or they're influenced by it without having that pull. Everyone's influenced. We all influenced by something and a lot of things, hopefully, but that there's that pull. And I can only relate, because that's what I've had in my life. I'm like, how did I end up here? How did I end up in this? What did I do? How did I do this? And I have no idea. I didn't have the plan. It just pulled me along, and I let it pull me, even though I had other opportunities to go make money or do this. I let this pull me along because I don't know why. I wish I could say why.
I find myself wondering the same thing.
Yeah, you jump out of airplanes.
Well, you know, that's like, too, this, yeah.
Yeah. What the hell's going on? Something's pulling you out of the
Why
airplane.
Do I need this?
Right.
I've heard you mention a few times, I mean, I think again in the book, that you do not have a great relationship with the current high priest of Church of Satan, Peter Gilmore. Can you explain why that is?
Oh, that's probably just my problem. I have beef with everyone. So it's like, I don't have a good relationship with everyone. I'm always willing to beef. I like to go to war with people. I'm forever at war. But I think Peter's of a different class of person, and he promotes a different kind of thing, like almost a economic supremacy or a, you know, financial supremacy, which I'm not into. I also...
Is that just his interpretation of LaVey's philosophy?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And his interpretation of right. And, but he's a smart fella. You know, it's just a personal thing. Like the problem became June 6, 2006, when Stanton LaVey was doing an event in LA called his did a wedding. And then the Church of Satan wanted to come out there and do an event for their thing, because Stanton was doing something with Danzig at a stadium, like a huge event. And so they attached themselves to his soapbox. That's the reality of it. Because I did an event there too called 666 Eve. I was there June 5th, and we rang in this 666, you know, like, no, it was a New Year's Eve, you know, playing off this whole thing. And my event was packed. And at that moment, everything was starting to really start to crumble. Peter was like, all the old guard was starting to move away from Peter because he was telling people what to do. It wasn't even a suggestive. It was like, don't talk to Stanton. And I'm like, well, now I'm going to go talk to him and see what's up. You know,
yeah.
Sorry. And I got on the phone with Stan, and we had words, you know, harsh words for each other. But at the end of the day, he's like, you can come to my event if you want. You know, there's free tickets for you. And I say, you can come to my event. And he's like, oh, I'd need security. And I go, I'll make sure you have security. You know, no one will fuck with you. And at that event, it was like, we all started to break. And there was an event. It was something on stage, like Follow Your Satanic Leader. Stephen Kasner, a really great artist that's passed away, you know, did this stuff and on stage. And it was really beautiful moment, but it was like, there was the fedora crowd, the COS, the new guard that Peter brought in, all had these fedoras on. They all dressed the same. It was like, and that's where I started calling, you know, dressing in black, the satanic clown suit. Cause it was like, yeah, you know, I'm not dressing in black anymore after this crowd. Fuck them. you know, I'm going back to blue jeans and a t-shirt. This is awful. This is like, and yeah, I go, the worst part is every waiter here has black on too. Cops wear all black. I'm like, I'm not looking to fit into society. This is counterculture. We're against the status quo. We're not even against them. We turned our back on the status quo. And so these people are looking to fit into the status quo. That's their key to the success. And that's their choice, of course. But I think it was a lot different with what I experienced as part of the last person of the old guard of the COS, yeah. And Anton LaVey's COS at that.
Sure.
That's something all these new people can't say. They can say all they want about me. They can hate on me all they want, but they don't have my credentials. They don't have my accomplishments, and they don't have the accomplishments that got me in the door to meet Anton LaVey. And they don't have the accomplishments that made Anton LaVey excited to meet me, from Stan's mouth to my ears. And Carlos, he was excited to meet you because of all you did. And so that is not spoken about. It's like all this other nonsense is spoken about. But the idea is that I actually have authority from the guy who wrote the book to talk about this and to translate it and to say, this is what I think he meant. And am I going to agree with Boyd Rice? No. Is he going to agree with Peter? No. But between all of the old guard, you're getting a translation, a firsthand account of the situation. When we go, it starts to get watered down a lot more. So what we have to say is of importance, and a historic importance at that. And so when people put that off, it's the same as the COS putting off Carla and Stanton. And for what? To be like cult members and let someone control a narrative versus making up their own mind based on information that's supplied to them. And sometimes I'll say, yeah, I got to hear kids go, where's your receipts? I go, motherfucker, I'm the receipt. I'm in the fucking room. What are you talking about? I'm there. I'm looking at it. Yeah. Where's your receipts? You wanted me to have a camera of Elon Musk fucking chip in my head to videotape things with my eyes? What are you talking about? Like, I'm the receipt. Boyd Rice is the receipt. Peter's the receipt. We are the receipts. Anyway, sorry, I get upset about that kind of I'm getting old, so I finally noticed I'm starting to get jaded towards young people, and I hate it because I tried to hold on.
I'm not far behind. I have those feelings. what is your current relationship, if you have one, to the Church of Satan? Do you consider yourself a member of that organization currently?
Well, I've never been kicked out, even though people say that, and I wish they would, so I can hang that on my wall as a plaque. Like, that's an award to me. That's almost better than being a member, being kicked out, especially for having an opinion. I've not done nothing illegal. And in my day, kids in the COS, you had to do something like hurt a child or a dog, a pet, to get kicked out. If they're kicking me out, I want it official. Do I consider myself a member? Just like I told Anton when he gave it to me, I don't consider myself a member. I don't consider myself a joiner. And he loved it. So I don't, unless you're asking for it. You want problems? I'm going to be that. You want to be religious to me? I'm going to say that's what I am. I'm an artist, though. I'm just me. And I don't even like the artist title, but that's how you got a role in this society. People called me that for over a decade before I took it and said, okay, I'm an artist. I'm just me. And I just, you know, I'm just a curious, wondrous person that's trying to retain my child. And I don't like to be a jaded old man. I want to see the world in as wonderful. And I want to have an imagination that things can be better. And I want to dream. And I want to think I can change the world. And I want to have all those grandiose thoughts. I don't want to be brought down to reality. And a lot of that jive does. So, you know, getting older, you start to get brought down to reality. You know, arthritis brings you down to reality.
Yeah.
Doing my book, I did it with, there's these young kids that do this thing called the Infernal Church.
Yeah.
One of them's Claudia. And you know these, you've been on there. Claudia Berdella and Baffy Myers, I think he goes by. But they helped with this book. And I had someone else helping. And they were like nefarious the way they edited things in the first version. But Claudia was like, you need this in the book. You need this in the book. And it was all really radical, like the eugenics thing that's in the book or something else. It was stuff that was not controlling the narrative. It was telling a story. Mm. And the person that was helping me edit wanted to control that narrative. And so those young people are the reason that book's out and so great, because, you know, and that's where it started with. Claudia was asking me these questions. I didn't know how old they were at the time. And I'm like, oh, I'll answer your questions. No big deal. And then someone's like, you're talking to 16-year-olds. This is disgusting. I'm like, yeah, they can buy this book at Amazon or anywhere they want. So I'm going to be able to talk about the book. I don't talk to them about adult subjects.
Yeah.
And I was like, Claudia knew so much about all of my work. It was like, oh, I've listened to your podcast 27 times. And I thought they were joking. And they're like, no, I really have. I've listened to that Mighty's Right podcast over 50 times or something like that. It's like, wow. can you help me with this book? Because right. You know everything about me and I don't know anything about me, actually. Tell me about me.
Yeah. Have you ever gone back and listened to the thing?
No, I read, you know, what was only when I did that I did that anniversary show.
Okay.
And I had gone back and heard clips of it, or, you know, it's just the way it goes when you're going through your archive or something, but I never sat there and listened to the whole thing. But then when I saw it by people that are trying to defame my name, right. And I believe they're like cops or something weird. There's something weird about these people, the way they present. And I read it. When I read it, I was like, oh, this wasn't meant for print. Because when you read it, it's harsh.
It does. It can look different when you read it on a page.
Yeah. When I was reading, I was like, oh, this is, I can see why people are angry. Okay. This is real ugly stuff.
Well, and you do lose even just texting with someone. Of course, some nuance is lost in the black and white. The tone or intent doesn't always translate. It makes things much more open to interpretation.
Yeah. And so doing that anniversary show with me and he, you know, he listened to it and he's like, I want you to listen to this again. And I did. And it's like I said, you know, I did that. It's on my YouTube. I've apologized. I won't be continuing to apologize. I've done that enough. But I understand how it's misunderstood and how it's correctly understood. And I put out ugly stuff because I lived in an ugly world. I don't understand what people don't understand about that, like what Mike Diana put out or Jim Goad or any of us were doing back there with the artistic terrorism movement, aesthetic terrorism movement or art that kills. We were putting out ugly stuff. And as I've explained, like hippies did peace and love. We did hate and violence because their shit didn't work. But no matter what, the intent was to try to change things. Try to change a society that is victimizing most people. And there's a very small percentage of people on top that reap the benefits. The intent is there. And the thing is, mark my words, that the young people of today are going to be my age and they're going to be criticized by the young people of their day and say everything you did was wrong, even though it seems right right now.
Oh, always.
And it is right. Yeah. It is right. It
can
is
we
right.
think of a time where the real young generation looks back one or two generations before them and says, we should be just like them. They did it right. That never happens.
Right. And so the young people are right. What we did was right in that moment. And when they look at it 20 years later and they're saying it's wrong, they're correct. And when they're saying they're right in this moment, they're correct. It's their world now. But they're going to get to my age and they're going to hear how they were wrong. And those young people are going to be correct.
Right.
And it's a weird moment.
Around and around we go.
Yeah, that's how life is. That's the evolution of it. And it goes back to like you hear, and I know now Native Americans aren't a monolith. I get that. But you hear this concept of eight generations. It takes eight generations to change things. And I think there's a truth to that. You look at it in any kind of struggle, and you see these 80 years, this 80 year span where you finally start to see change after 80 years of fighting, after 80 years of educating younger people to change. So every generation, we change a little bit more and a little bit more.
Yeah.
And so what I hear young kids say today, like I've heard people say they won't listen to NWA or Ghetto Boys or anything like that. That's awful music. And I'm like, but that was the first Black Lives Matter. Hate to tell you.
Yeah.
That was the first of it. Yeah. And that's how crude it was. That's what had to happen. And that was right then in order to make the trails blazed for you to walk and say Black Lives Matter.
Of course. I guess we should talk about some Satanic Temple stuff. A good portion of the book is dedicated to that stuff. I don't want you to tell the whole story of Doug and TST because people should definitely buy the book if they want more of the details. But what do most people have wrong about the founding of the Satanic Temple? What big things are missing from the official narrative that was told in the Hail Satan film and other places?
Oh, wow. I wish Claudia was here to answer that one. They'd be able to be very specific. I would say everything. When you're cutting out such a major part of it, which is me and that association, when you're like literally lying about that in your documentary and other things, I think at that point you should understand that the group you're involved with is a pack of liars. And if you're okay with that because they put the Satan word on it, that's fine, I guess. But they're lying to you, not me. I know the truth. And that's the same beef I have with anyone holding back knowledge within this kind of movement. That's not really cool. Let people make their own decision, present the knowledge as it is. You know, it's not like you can definitely not trust them. They've been proven to lie. I'm putting out a book with a bunch of information. Am I biased? Certainly. But tell me where I'm lying in this. I'm not. I got all the receipts right there. And so what's missing, I think with that Mighty's Right show, when I listened to the, when going back to it again, Doug's intent, you hear him talk about eugenics, you hear him talk about controlling people, you hear him talking about a different kind of thing than I was or my ex-partner was. And so we were three people that put that energy into that show, and we all had different intent or intentions throughout our life. And you see that playing out. I think Doug is a really smart kid. He was a kid. Doogie was a kid for me. So like, I always think of him as a kid. He's an old man now. He's a very smart person. And he's educated in the Ivy League. And I don't know any working class person that should be trusting Ivy League people unless they're an actual doctor operating on your heart or brain. And they're run by lawyers. You can't trust lawyers as far as you could throw them. So those are some things you might want to consider. I don't know if that's hidden, but Doug's able to communicate like a politician, but his intent is really clear. It's about control. It's about power. It's about manipulating people. And there's a quote in there, and I can't think of it offline. I have it in I'd have to look online, but there's a quote where he talks about in one of the emails to me, he's like, listen, the most successful people are the ones who get people to do the violence for them. And we can basically turn people against each other and get them to do violence for us. And it was that moment when I was working on stuff, I was like, oh yeah, that's far away from my philosophical feelings. I am a person that wants less control of people. I want more freedoms. I want more rights. That's an intention that's always there and that's not going to change. It's, you know, that's part of his character. And it looks like certain things aren't going to change with me. It's part of my character. I'm not going to change to be anything less than wondrous and try to look at the world in that way, like a child. I think that's the biggest thing, you know, and it's the idea, like also like culture vulturing, or that Kevin, you know, bought his way into this stuff. Those are weird things. And I don't know how anyone can look at that stuff highly. I don't know how a person that buys their way into any kind of culture can look at themselves in the mirror at the end of the day. And so I don't know if those are secrets, but I don't know if people are, when you're younger, it's easy to miss those things, you know, and it's easy to make someone like myself maybe sound paranoid because you haven't the experience that I have. But,
I think younger people whose introduction to Satanism was the Satanic Temple are right. going to have a vastly different perspective. You know, they don't know what they don't know.
Right. But it'll come back around to LaVey stuff, but they don't. And it's like, they don't get that. It's like that. That's not part of, we're not part of the status quo. We're not part of that system. LaVey turned his back on the system and invited people in that the system had turned its back on them. The outcasts, stuff like that. The people who were thinking for themselves, the people who were struggling to be themselves, express themselves. He was the first, a big church that was like, please, gay people, come on in. Sinners, you're welcome here. It wasn't part of that kind of stuff. The most political LaVey got was, again, an artistic illustration of things where he's like, the churches need to be taxed. Outside of that, it's like, it's just a cool, fashionable name. And it's just like any culture vulturing situation. It's like, it's a shame that, you know, one of the hardest things going to therapy was finding out how typical I was. I tell my fucking early on about nine years ago, I tell this first therapist, I'm like, you're never going to get me. I'm King Satanist. I'm an artist. I think differently. I'm a motherfucking great person. She goes, yeah, I got books on you. And she shows me all the books on depression, PT, all this kind of stuff. And it's the same thing with culture vulturing. When you look at it from the jazz perspective, look at jazz and then look at elevator music. Okay, look at how it was culture vulture and what it was turned into. And you're basically, Satanic Temple is basically the elevator music of a cult. Okay, it's like really gross shit that can go down in an elevator and appease people. That's not what it is. It's about questioning authority, not becoming authority. It's about, you know, it's about those things, about harvesting individual power, not suckling up to power to become part of this illusion of power. It's, you know, it's about your individual power. And so I think they're missing conceptually a lot to be manipulated by, and I understand because I helped create the fucking thing. I like, you can tell me whatever you want, people that are in the TST, but I helped create it. So I know the tricks that we used. And I'm like, same as when we were talking off air, I don't know if you record it, but we're talking like about the English language, how hard it is sometimes to, communicate because people have different interpretations of words. And I, you know, this, I understand that as a marketeer and a trickster, like we needed a great logo. We needed colors. We needed these things that would just grab people, you know, and so, and we needed to not be exclusive. We needed to let anyone in that wanted in to build numbers. And so, you know, COS isn't like that. They're very exclusive. You have to pay and they still don't get in. They still don't give you, you got to earn your way to get conversations from them. And so I think, like I said, that idea that Doug early on when we were talking about, when we were talking about this, people point to, oh, that was 20 years ago, but with that radio show or that podcast, but they won't, they don't let me have the same, they'll hold me to the 20 years, but not Doug. But here's the thing, that emails that I'm talking about where Kevin's like, yeah, Scientology did that, those tricks, we'll do that trick. And that's in the book. Or Doug talking about, we're going to get people to do violence for us and we're going to turn people against each other.
You know, when I got the book and opened it up and flipped through, I saw that there were large sections that were transcribed conversations. And I was like, oh, I don't know. I don't know if I can read emails and conversations. But then once I started to, some of those email chains between yourself and Doug and Kevin, AKA Malcolm Jerry of TST, those were some of the most fascinating parts, I thought, illuminating, really.
Great to hear. I wondered how that would play out, but I just had to present the information as bare as I could. And that's why there's like a lot of transcripts from radio shows, because I felt like, could I have rewritten this stuff? Certainly, and quoted it. But I felt like if I'm presenting this as the receipts, I'm going to present it in everyone's words as it played out, like moment by moment, here it is, yeah. Drop it down.
Yeah, and I'll say for anybody who might be skeptical of reading a chain of emails or something, it is, I found it to be interesting for sure, especially if you're at all interested in these stories and the formation of the Satanic Temple and the way things went down at the time and people's mindset and goals and everything. It really is pretty interesting to read.
There's a whole chain of things, Doug arguing on some chat board about defending Anton LaVey.
Yeah. That's right.
And Might is Right and stuff like that. The exact opposite of what he talks about today. So this book should show you, like, you know, you're hanging out with two-faced people, like liars. And if that's what you're looking to be, you know, go to law school. Go to law school like Kevin did. That's what you are. You're a two-faced liar.
And it's, you know, one thing, and I hate to even make us hang out on this topic for too long, but one thing that does stand out, you mentioned Doug gets sort of maybe a different treatment from some over the course of that 20 years. People look back and say, well, it's been 20 years. He's changed. He's different. He's whatever. But when it comes to you, maybe they're not as forgiving. But these emails and things, they're not from 20 or 25 years ago. They're from closer to like 10 years ago. And right as the Satanic Temple was starting, a lot of the stuff. And so he went from saying certain things about LaVey and that philosophy and that whole scene to saying the exact opposite and attacking the Church of Satan and their philosophy in a very, very short span of time. Like he flipped.
Yeah. And then there's the idea, like he talks about, I had no involvement in it, even though you can see clearly, hey, we're going out to hang out with William from the Skinny Puppy and Kevin's going to be there and I want you to be there. And this is like 5 years before TST comes to fruit. Okay. Yeah. And so his jive about me is also in there.
And the reason, maybe tell me if I get this wrong, but the reason we know Doug as Lucian Greaves is because you didn't take the job as being Lucian Greaves.
That's right. Because I mentored him. I mean, Doug got all of this stuff from me. And that's just, I'm not upset about that necessarily. That's why you mentor people.
Yeah. And did it come down to like a financial decision? They didn't agree to pay the amount you asked for and a combination of things?
Yeah, that's hilarious that thing's put forward like that by them. Like it's some sort of like it was about money. And I hear people say that online, like it was about money. Yeah, we live in America. It's all about money. Get the fuck out of here. Contracts are about money. No shit, Sherlock.
Yeah.
You have zero life experience when you're arguing that one. But it was also, like I said, you can see the email chains start to trickle away when he's talking about putting people against each other. And it had to do about control over my image, control over what was going on. Like I wanted, and this was a film when we were talking about things, you know, we talked about both things. You know, you can see it when I'm putting the book together, we're talking about manipulating people, starting a religion, doing a film, but you can see in those emails, it's really a lot less about doing a film. And so when they wanted to present me as that, Kevin was using a logo that was a cow logo, and he was calling people minions. Kevin's film that he started was going to make fun of Satanists, and I wasn't for that. And so I convinced them to move away from that kind of stuff. And you can see the first Lucien Greaves, he was put out there as a joke.
Yeah.
And Doug and I took this seriously. And I'm like, Doug, you know, we got to have someone that can speak for this. If you want this to be passed any kind of film, get, you know, to make any kind of thing, anything out of this, it has to be someone that can represent well. That guy was an awful joke. And, you know, I said, go after Matt Zane. He'd be great. And Doug's, and then they were pitching me on it. And at the time, looking back on my photos, you know, kids, I lost 130 pounds. I'm very proud of that. But I was telling, it's hard to even talk about, man, geez. I was telling Joseph about it earlier. I was crying the other night. I saw pictures of myself, how big I was. I was really big and round because I was really, really depressed and had a hard time.
And that was around that time?
Yeah, I was being run out of, I've been run out of a couple towns because of my association with LaVey. So that was, it's really hard to be run out of a town and have everything taken from you multiple times that you worked hard for, believe it or not. And so, yeah, it was at that time I was out of it and I was real big. And I'm very sexy now. Okay. I knew I was like pudgy. I didn't know I was that big. Anyway, my point is I understood that there was potential to make fun of me because they were already making fun of this philosophy. And so I was like, I need creative control over my image. I need control over the edits and stuff like that. And that's what they wouldn't give me. So that was a large part about why you can say that's about money or image and those are vain or superficial things. But that was a big part of it, certainly. And they do owe me money. Yeah, they do. And so they still owe me money. But I don't know how that takes that. That would invalidate what I have to say. I don't understand that concept at all.
Oh yeah, I know. No, I don't think those things should be connected.
They work really hard at invalidating what I have to say. But I noticed the Arkansas state's attorney didn't invalidate what I have to say, and the Arkansas judge in that case made everything I say stay in the record. And
I was just going to ask you about that.
Oh wow, go please.
Yeah, the one section of the book. I think this is what you're about to mention. It details the time you were called to offer testimony in a lawsuit involving the Satanic Temple. Maybe you can tell everybody what that lawsuit was and what your testimony was about.
Well, my testimony was for the right-wing Christians that are suing the Satanic Temple. I was happy to do it. I'll just let you know. I some of this stuff is traumatic, so my mind's all over the place at the moment. You have to excuse me. Sure. I'm stuttering and get a little emotional. But within that, but with the rhetoric that I see online about it, what they use legalese and lawyer talk to defame me, I think they've said, oh, his word isn't worth anything. They threw that out of court. That's not what happened. What happened is they argued really hard to keep my words out of court, keep me out of court and keep me off the record. And the judge set standards for me to enter the courtroom that the state's attorney didn't want to put me through. And that was a deposition and I was willing to do it, but the state's attorney's like, we don't want to put you through that. You've been kind enough. And these people are real jerks and they've done really abusive things in depositions before. So imagine that working with these right-wing Christians that cared, you know, nice. I loved it either way. I told them I'm willing to go in there and deal with these people, but they didn't want that. But the fact of the matter is the judge in the case kept my word on record. They tried to get it stricken out of the record. My shit is in the court record for a reason. And that's because it was valid and the judge found it valid and honorable and took my word and my oath.
What was that case about?
The statue. They wanted to put that statue up. And they were arguing, you know, basically my testimony is to say it wasn't a religion. It was, you know, it's anything but a religion. And I can speak from authority because I'm a person that Anton LaVey gave the authority to speak on Satanism. And they don't represent that philosophy at all. They're a political outreach group or a lobbyist group. And this is exactly what Doug was trying to create as a lobbyist group. And if they had any power at all, lobbyist groups are bullies. They go in and talk to politicians and say, we're going to send 100,000 people at your front door. We're going to fuck you up with people. We'll protest you if you don't do what we want. And that's how they get votes. Doug doesn't have those, the TST doesn't have those numbers, or they would be doing that. And that's what they were trying to do, is become a lobbyist group, because there's great power in lobbyist groups, maybe more so than a politician. Lobbyist groups can make presidents dance if they're big enough. And so that's what they were attempting to do, but they failed. And so now they're just a glorified law firm and a tourist attraction in a sleepy town in Massachusetts.
Yeah, those things do seem to make up the bulk of what the Satanic Temple does.
Yeah, Doug should be proud of himself being a tourist attraction.
What do you make of the state of Satanism in 2024? Do you care about the state of Satanism in 2024?
Well, I certainly do, because I have a long history with, I was friends with Anton and stuff. So I do care about it. I think it, but as much as I can care about anything like that, I care about myself more than anything. Right.
Yeah.
But I do think it's something that's empowering. I do think it's in a revolutionary thing. I do think it's, I do think it's brought women's rights way far. Human sexuality pushed it forward in a revolutionary way. And so, pleasures of the flesh, stuff like that. So I think it's a really important movement. And there's a person in the COS, I think, Matt Paradise. He does some cool books where he talks about history of Satanism and stuff like that. And he'll talk about, Beethoven or the satanic artists of classical music on forward. And I think there's something about that counterculture, that outlaw artist, that outsider artist, as you call outsider Satanism. There's something about that that's always going to be there. And I think that is represented in the satanic art movement. What I consider Satanism is an art and intellectual philosophy. Mm-hmm. I don't see it as a religion. If you can't, a religion, you can stick to the wall. If you can't stick a Satanist to the wall, you can't really call it a religion. It's a philosophy that is always going to move. It's going to erode social constructs. That's what we're here to do. So, as far as that go, hail Satan. Let's hopefully that is a 10,000 year thing, and it's eroding constructs constantly. And when you're an old like me and you have children, hopefully they're using it against you to erode the constructs that you built. That's the way we move forward. It's a good thing. It's a good thing the kids harass me. It boils the blood. I'm old. I get confused and I get angry quick. Like, I gotta fucking have a nap before I talk to you, young kid. But it's the way it should be. I was that way. I loved it. Making old people cry and making upset. I loved it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think if someone wants it to go away, then, they got to go away first, which means the Catholic Church, Christianity, religion has to move away, get gone. And then you sort of take the power out of what a religion you would think Satanism is, which it's not. It's a philosophy.
Now, you place a high value, I think, on the importance of the counterculture aspect of Satanism. Mm-hmm. Is it important that Satanism hold on to parts of its scary underground vibe, or is the nicey nice, pink fluffy mainstream Satanism a good thing?
Well, it's all relative, man. It's not scary to me. It's attractive to me. So it's like, that's what, people like, oh, you did. I remember someone saying, oh, you did this to be spooky. I'm like, no, I did it because I like it. It makes me happy. It makes me smile. So it's just like people who have gone through trauma like horror movies often. You'll be like, why? You want to relive? They just do. Yeah. I think it's a chemical thing, actually. But yeah, I don't think fitting into the mainstream fits. I think being counter to the current is, like I said, we're here to erode constructs. And I would say by any means necessary. Malcolm X was a counterculture person, and he created a lot of influence. And by any means necessary, move forward. By any means necessary, move your people forward, move your society forward. And so I think that's an important thing to always retain. You're not going to be influential when you're playing along with everyone else. You're going to be influential when you go against the grain. And a lot of people don't know who Crowley is anymore. Like, they're younger people are like, who is that? But they'll know who David Bowie is, which is his art was heavily influenced by Crowley. So Crowley had an immense influence, and he changed the world, whether people want to give him that credit or not. LaVey have the same influence. He changed the world, whether people want to make fun of him or whatever. But you, even the TST people, it's like foolish for them to talk shit about him. You're literally walking on the ground he paved. Like, literally. But you're going to talk shit on him? You're going to put dirt on his name? That's crazy. we talk about counterculture, you know, that's where the influence is. That's what changes history, is like that erosion of constructs, that moment that you influence a lot of, you do something so incredibly different that it takes hold. And so you asked me if I care about it or anything like that. Certainly I care about it. It's part of my legacy. I do care. That's why I put the book out, not just for revenge, but it was to tell my story. And it's because, do I walk away from this because it's so traumatic and upsetting to me? Or do I take my responsibility that I was given from LaVey, and do I fix what I started? Do I fix the mistake I made? Do I try to fix that mistake? So that's what I did. I try to fix the mistake with my book, try to illustrate what the fuck actually happened. It's not like, you know, I don't think anywhere in the book, well, I think maybe I do. I probably do slag on them. Oh, I do call culture vultures. No, it's like, I don't call them any names. Yeah, I do. Fuck them.
Yeah. Yeah. I suspect most times you talk about them, you probably call them some names.
Yeah, it's not even, it's impulsive at this point, you know.
Yeah, it's all right.
They did a lot of really nefarious stuff that I will write about in a different context at a different time. But you can look at what happened to certain members of the Process Church and the psychological warfare that they went through. And that played out with me and my ex. And there was a reason that it took me 5 years of intense therapy to get my mind back, and EMDR therapy and all that kind of stuff. But that, again, that's just going to sound paranoid to people. People are going to say, where are the receipts? Talk to my psychiatrist, talk to my therapist.
Right.
You know, but yeah, anyway.
Well, before I let you go today, we definitely have to talk about the Witches' Sabbath. This is an event happening in Los Angeles on April 30th. Tell us all about it.
April 30th and May 1st. I always wanted to keep it those 2 days because it goes right, you know, April 30th, the Witch's Night goes right into the day, right? Mm-hmm. So the first one I did in Chicago, we did, and it got pulled off for almost till the end. And then we had like, I don't know if it was 13 or 18 cop cars. I get those, the 3 and the 8 mixed up. There was quite a few cop cars, and it was a venue that fit like about 300 people, 400 people, and we had 2,000 people turn out. It was like tons of people everywhere. I did really good with the promotion. And then there was a cop helicopter above, and the domestic terrorism task force was there. It was wild. And it's the first time I saw Chicago police afraid. So it was like wild, but it was a good time. And it was just like people dancing around. And it was like the reviews of that were like, wow, I've never seen every generation, every gender, every culture in one room. And younger people were telling me that. And I thought the same thing, but I come from a generation where we were very segregated. So it was a really beautiful event because witches, and we do it as a non-denominational event. It's all witches are welcome. It's not like a satanic thing, but it is. We're throwing it, and so it was really beautiful. It was really a beautiful, fun event where people just came to have a drink or dance or just have fun. And so that's what it's going to be in Los Angeles. We did it last year, but it was sort of morose because it was Stanton passed away and I was working on it with Stanton LaVey. And so Sharon LaVey really pushed it forward. She's like, we have to do this. We have to, you know, you have to carry on. You have to pull forward. I was like, I'm so depressed that I want to do it. So she's a real strong-willed woman. And she pushed it forward then. And she's really, I'm working with Sharon LaVey on this, and I love working with her. And I'm working with someone called Lucy Vaughn, one of Sharon's friends. And you know, it's hilarious. It's weird, but all of Sharon's friends remind me all of LaVey's old guard friends. They're all like gothic hippies. They're real cool people. Or else, you know, if you're cool to them, they're cool. Or else,
right.
They're all got a knife in their boot. They're ready to fight, you know, but they're real cool. Don't fuck around. And so, you know, we're planning like a bloodbath burlesque where, you know, blood rains down on the, and the guy, the venue owner, he's like really cool. So he's like, I want to make it rain blood. And I'm like, oh, let's do this. And so we just got this great show. Like everyone is being theatrics. The bands are working with us. Like no band is going to do a full set. They're going to be like play a song in between DJs. And so it's all about having a really fun party where people can dance and have a good time. And then Sharon's doing a ritual and I'm going to do a ritual and I'm making the robes for them special. So we're just really, we're taking it like a Christmas event, like, or, you know, like, and I don't mean to compare it. I have to compare it to Christmas because that's what people know, but we're taking it as a celebration. And we're like, you know, If things have grown so much, we need our own holiday. Then if we're going to play games with this bullshit, let's take this seriously. Take the day off of work on April 30th, enjoy yourself, go dance, have drink, do whatever you do that you like. Don't go dance, watch TV, but do something for yourself. And so I think it's time that we push that date forward. If we're going to talk shit about being Satanists, then we should try to have something, and we should celebrate it on the day, not like Halloween, where it's like put to the week. It's Halloween's now October 26th or whatever the Saturday is before. It's like bullshit.
Yeah. What day does it fall on this year? The April 30th?
Tuesday and Wednesday.
Tuesday and Wednesday. Okay.
Yeah. So right away, people are like, the band's like, who's going to show up? I'm like, Satanists. They don't have a day. And in Chicago, I'm in Chicago. So LA could relate to me. Like, people who work that like are working at clubs and stuff, they have to work on the weekends. Everyone has to work on the weekends. A Tuesday event is like amazing for people who live in Chicago, because they're like, oh, I don't have to work that day. I can come. Yeah, right. Exactly. And you should be taking the day off anyway. You shouldn't be going, oh, I need it on the weekend. It's not Halloween. It's Walpurgis, and you should just enjoy the day, the night of the witches, and start a barbecue, start a fire. I think everyone should have fires going. That's me.
Can you tell us anything about where the event is? How can people get into it?
We're not going to tell the event until like probably the day before, the day of, because we're going to just run it like a rave. It's at a legal venue. They have licensing, but I get harassed too much. Mm. And after the terrorism task force shows up, I'm going to make them work for it if they're going to fuck with us. But I can tell them right now, we have backup. So if they fuck with us, we're just going to another venue, and we have another venue after that. So you're just going to follow us around town, but you're going to follow us. We're not going to follow you, you bitch.
Understood.
You little piggy bitch.
Well, Shane, what have we missed? Where can people find you and the book and information about the Witches' Sabbath and all this stuff?
Well, I have a link tree set up, and like I'm on, ShaneBugby.com, ArtworkOfProphecy.com, BaphometX.com is Sharon LeVay's website. It's really great. Oh, you know what? I've got a new book coming out called Devil's Avenger. It's by Burton Wolf. I'm reprinting Burton Wolf's Devil's Avenger.
Tell us a little about it.
It's a biography on Anton LaVey. It was the first one written on LaVey, and LaVey, you know, for the most part, the LaVeys don't like it. I'm reprinting it, though. It's the Burton Wolf, you know, stuff. And I'm doing that with the gentleman from Reno Satanic.
Okay.
And I'm really happy with that book. We work together. And it's a young guy from Reno Satanic where he just asked so many questions, just like Claudia and Baffy, that he just kept going with these questions. I'm like, my goodness, you have a lot of questions. And he's a book nerd. He's a bookworm. So he's like, he's like, I really want to publish. And I'm like, you know, I'm at this age. I don't have kids. But I was telling you earlier when we were off the air.
Yeah, you're just running around adopting all these young Satanists.
That's right. So I'm like, I'm telling this guy, I'm like, you know, I want to hand you down this. I want to give you my knowledge. I need to give it to someone. And he's like, I want it. So he's there. He's taking it all like a sponge, man. And I'm like, so I love working with him because I'm able to fulfill that thing. I wish I had a child to give my knowledge to. I don't want it to go to waste. Yeah. So through him, through Claudia, I'm able to fulfill that. And it's wonderful for me. That it serves me well. And so I'm doing this with him to show him how to do what I do, what I've done for 30 years. And he's trying to build the biggest satanic library. This guy's a bookworm on par with LaVey. Like, and when I met LaVey, he had just books stacked everywhere, all over his house, books.
I can tell you right now, I bet you he's going to be thrilled to hear you say those words that you just said.
Oh, on par with LaVey?
Yeah, he's going to love that.
Well, he earned it. He earned it.
That's great.
I'm not even saying that to be nice to him.
Yeah.
Jason's worked with me now. And he knows he's gotten the wrath where I've had to go, are you still with me after that phone call?
Right.
You know, I'm like, the fuck is this garbage you just gave me? I asked you to edit it, not fucking shit on it. You know, I give him like this angry publisher rant, and I'm like, oh, you know, dude, I'm sorry. You're a young man. He's like, no, you were right. It's just harsh words. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, man. Ugh.
Sometimes you can't help the old cranky from coming out.
Yeah, and I come from the Chicago, and so, you know, saying those things in Chicago is nothing but a thing. But young man from Reno, he might like, why? Boy, that's some harsh tone.
Yeah. Well, Shane, thank you very much. I appreciate you taking the time once again to come on and tell your stories.
Joseph, thank you for presenting all the information you do. Not that I always agree. I don't agree with you all the time. Of course I don't.
You'd have to be crazy to.
Yeah, well, you don't call me crazy, Noodles.
All right.
You ever see that movie, Once Upon a Time in America? Great movie. But no, I really appreciate how you put the information out there, regardless of the flack you might get. That's the real deal.
I think I'm slightly past the point of giving a fuck about the flack I will inevitably get. So fuck
and
it.
and hail me. Thank you.
Hail Shane, everybody. All right. Thank you, Shane. I'll talk to you again real soon.
Peace.
All right, guys. Just as I was wrapping up this episode, I remembered that a while back when Shane was finishing up his book, he contacted me about writing a little blurb for it. And I'll share with you what I wrote. Supposedly, Anton LaVey said that Satanism must remain a custard that can't be nailed to the wall. That's how I think of Shane Bugbee. Is he the good guy or the bad guy? Is he weaving another wild tale or is he telling us the hard truth? If you're the easily offended type, Shane is bound to be your boogeyman. Regardless of how you feel about him, the history and culture of Satanism is undoubtedly a richer story with Shane Bugbee in it. Thank you for listening, and if you've got a moment, please visit the website at HailSatanPodcast.com. Stay safe out there, and hail Satan. I'm going to ship it in heaven. He will flee his service.